And welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon here in America, Tuesday evening in the EU and elsewhere in the world. I'm Stephen Roberts and this is Cancel the Cabal on peoplesinternetradio.com. Welcome everyone. I have a special ad hoc guest today. It was just set up within the last couple of hours by Ed Opperman, so thanks to Ed. I'm not sure if he listens. I know he doesn't sign into the chat room or anything, but he might still be listening, so who knows. Anyways, I want to introduce Kim Borghese. Kim is a Nevada Green Party co-chair and was a delegate to nominate Jill Stein as a Green presidential candidate for the Green Party National Convention. She's been an activist for many years working on environmental and climate issues. She's a nurse practitioner and lives in the Las Vegas area with her husband and two sons. So, just a short bio there, Kim. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, yeah, just speak up as good as you can, please. The microphone.
I'll make sure the microphone is closer to my face. How's
that's
that?
That's good. That's good. Okay, right good. There. Yes. Well, let's talk about the Green Party and some of the other parties a little bit for people in the EU, which is a predominant audience. They are interested in American politics as much in the alternate media, more so than the mainstream media.
Yeah, I'm actually glad to have this opportunity. Obviously, we all know that our mainstream media has a tendency to block out some of the reality that is going on in our world in favor of the crazy two-party system politics that's going on right now. As far as the Green Party goes, I'm sure many people in the EU will be familiar with the Green Party. The Green Party of the United States is affiliated with the International Green Party. We actually got started here in the States in 1984, and we are currently the fourth largest political party in the United States. Right now, I would think most people are familiar with the Green Party, but you'd be surprised kind of on the streets. You ask people, do you know who the Green Party is? Or do you know who Jill Stein is, who's our presidential nominee? And they have no clue. So there's still a lot of education that needs to be done here in the States and locally. But I think probably internationally, more people probably are familiar with the Green Party. I wanted to repeat that Jill Stein is our presidential nominee. She actually ran for president in 2012 as well. Part of the reason why a lot of people don't know about Jill is because there has been a lot of media blackout. And both in 2012 and in this election, third parties have not been included in the presidential debates. So despite the fact that both Jill and Gary Johnson, who is the Libertarian candidate, are on enough ballots in enough states with enough electoral votes to actually win the presidency, a lot of people haven't had the opportunity to hear from them. And part of that reason is because the Committee on the Presidential Debates, which is a private organization, basically has made this rule that you have to have 15% of the popular polling, which is done by about five polling agencies here in the States, in order to be in the debates. However, that system's kind of a little bit rigged as well and is very biased. So
kind of a little bit?
Kind of a little bit, yeah, kind of a lot, actually. I could probably go on and on in a lot of different directions. But so interestingly, and I find this actually kind of the most interesting thing, is that prior to the Nevada Democratic Caucus, where there was a lot of corruption and rigging going on, there was a huge group of Bernie supporters, the Bernie or bust people, who said we're done with this and we're out. And then, of course, after the Democratic National Convention, after Bernie wasn't nominated, then there was the whole big Dem exit. Prior to that, Jill Stein was getting probably, I would say, maybe 6 to 9% in these polls. And then right after Dem exit, when everybody kind of switched to green and really started kind of learning more about Jill, all of a sudden the polls were at 2%. So, you can see there's just something weird going on. And then, of course, independent polling is showing, you know, in some states, pretty good polling, maybe like 14% right now. However, they're pretty much keeping Jill down at about 2%. So, and then Gary probably got up to about 13%, but again, not enough to get in. And they actually sued to try and get in, and they didn't. Well, anyway, I'll back up. And then, but with that being said, democracy clearly isn't being served. So you have, you know, four people running for president. But the American public has not been able to hear from two of these people. And it's really a shame. I mean, particularly not to be able to hear from Jill. She is quite an amazing person. She has a great plan. She doesn't just have problems. She has solutions to all those problems and that we are facing here in the United States and really, you know, often globally. So it's really actually inspirational to hear from her. So what Jill's been doing, just, you know, if anyone is interested in kind of hearing how Jill kind of speaks, you know, obviously they can go on her website, Jill2016.com. But Democracy Now!, which, as you know, is an independent news outlet, did their own debate with Jill. They invited Gary. But he declined to be in the same to do it as well. But anyway, so they spliced the debate. So they basically asked the questions to both Clinton and Trump, and then they give Jill the opportunity. And so it's almost like she's there at the debates. And it's actually very refreshing to hear from somebody who really sticks to the topics and, you know, isn't mudslinging. So anyway, that's that. I could go on, but did you have any questions or you want to direct this somewhere else?
Yeah, I just want to give my little opinion here. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really political until probably 2001, you know, mm-hmm. the September 11th, 2001 WTC attacks, Trade Center attacks. Mm-hmm. That pretty much opened my eyes to the political world. I was a sports nut, and I worked, I was a blue-collar worker. I worked hard, and, you know, I equated my value system with the Republican Party for the most part, mm-hmm. as a conservative. But I didn't really know what a stereotype was back then, and now that I do, I've gone to college, and I've learned about rhetorical devices, and I've learned about manipulations. I've got a degree in communications. So if I actually wanted to, I could work for a news outlet or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not that I ever would, because they are controlling and deceiving and manipulating people every day. But anyways,
with that actually being said, I don't want to cut you off, but are you, Did you want to finish your thought, and then I'll tell you something special about the Green Party?
I can finish after. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that is another very good and unique thing about the Green Party, is that the Green Party is the only party that doesn't take any money from big corporations or super PACs or anything like that. So they are not beholden to lobbyists or special interests. So, you know, the values that we have, that we base our everything we say and do and our platform is based on, we're able to actually have some integrity with those values, because we don't have anybody that we owe favors to or owe anything to. We only owe everything we do to the values that we support. So that's a huge deal. I mean, obviously, we know right now with the two-party system, it's really not a two-party system. It's just one party. The corporatocracy.
That's what I was going to get into, actually.
Yeah, and behind both of those people is a lot of dirty money. You know, there's probably about four or five big players on the global scene that kind of control everything. And even right now, we see the Republican Party kind of falling apart. But even there, you know, Hillary Clinton basically says so many things that used to, you know, be very Republican, and now it's somehow Democratic.
But, well, she had to. She had to get her husband elected in 1992, because let's just face it, you know, to stereotype a nation, it was basically a Christian nation and basically had conservative values, and they had to sound conservative to get elected back in 1992.
Right. And now I would say, you know, if you read the Democratic Party's current platform that they ratified in, you know, here in 2016, it sounds really nice. And I will basically credit Bernie Sanders for a lot of that, because he was able to bring a very progressive and a farther left type of view to the Democratic Party and kind of push them a little bit in the to the left. But the problem is that these parties, no matter what party it is, I would say, except for the Green Party, is pretty much all talk and all on paper, but their actions prove otherwise. So even though their platform looks really nice on paper, and it's actually, you know, very similar to some of what the Green Party platform is, it's just saying, and it's not, you know, there's no action behind that. I mean, we see
rhetoric.
That almost every day, where they say one thing and do another.
Yes, yes, it's all deceptive rhetoric is what you mean, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's to basically appease the people that, yes, we're going to do things. Oh yes, change. Oh yes, we embrace, you know, the climate talks in Paris, and we're going to, you know, get to clean energy by whatever year. But then at the same time, they're allowing new, you know, oil pipelines and new drilling and, you know, the Gulf and all of this stuff. It's just like, well, how, and, you know, all this fracking, it's like, well, how does that equate to we're going to uphold this, you know, clean energy by 2030 plan, you know? So again, it's just what people want to hear, basically, but.
Well, certainly it is. And then, well, there we get into the concept that they have to tell the people what they want to hear, because they won't get elected, as far as I'm concerned, if they actually told the truth.
Right. If they told their truth, exactly.
Yes.
Interestingly, though, I mean, I do have some hope for the generations that are here in front of us. I think my parents' generation is probably one that was definitely a lot more trusting of the government, as far as, you know, they have our best interests. They've got our back. But I think now with my generation and younger than me, it's like a progressive distrust. And I would say these young people, millennials, they don't believe anything they see or hear anymore. They're kind of like, they know that the media and everything they see is potentially just made up. And so there's a lot of distrust. And it's sad in one point, but it's kind of good in the other, because now I think people are starting to kind of see through that veil of lies that's been shoveled to us through the media for a very long time. And not just through the media. I mean, it's through our school education system. It's through just about everything. The propaganda in this country is amazing.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. It's, well, they, you know, they have multiple PhDs behind them, and in the department, when it comes to writing their speeches, and every word that they say on a camera or into a radio microphone is scrutinized, and it's pretty much scripted for them. It's deceptive in nature.
Right. And, you know, I guess there's that thing now called social engineering, that, you know, these people are experts at social engineering, and they've been social engineering us for a really long time. I mean, again, it's very complex, but none of this just started yesterday. I mean, our country was founded on many of the problems we still have today. We have a lot of issues with classism, and capitalism hasn't done us any favors. And you add those two together, and it's just world catastrophe, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, it is. And it's really no accident that they pretty much invented the progenitors of the social media back at the latter part of the 19th century for the coming of the 20th century. Now, the medium of communication back then was basically print. Mm-hmm. And people were a lot smarter back then than what they are now. I think it's been said by some of the elite people that they thank the new technology of the 20th century in helping further their agenda. Because if it were only for the print, they would not have been able to have had the agenda that they've had in the last 115 to 120 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping now we're coming to a time where people are reconnecting on a more personal level, and so that we can really see truth and right actually in front of our faces. You know, we don't have to necessarily depend so much on the media anymore. Now it's kind of like, let's bring everything back to, you know, more centralized, or not centralized, decentralized, into our local communities. And let's kind of interact with each other one-on-one, and let's work on things at the local level. And that's where, you know, again, you can start having more faith in people and faith in systems. And the Green Party is very much about that. You know, really, decentralization is one of our 10 values. And we think that, you know, if we can start working more locally, starting to elect local leaders and work together, not just, you know, on the political side, but in every aspect of life, then really we can start seeing some changes, I think.
What are some of the aspects of Jill's campaign?
So one of her, you know, the big thing is, you know, getting the money out of politics is really big. She's got a couple things that she's writing her campaign on. One of them is freeing students from student debt. She believes that she's kind of got this winning margin of 43,000 students, or, you know, young and old, that are kind of trapped in this debt, which could be predatory debt. And part of the reason why they are, of course, education costs so much. But a lot of these students go to school and they get a good education, but then they have no jobs once they get out of school. And that's partly a result of, you know, our economic collapsing that we've had over the last 10 or so years, so that the jobs just aren't there anymore. And so she feels that if we can bail out Wall Street and bail out the big banks, we can certainly bail out the students who, you know, are inheriting basically this debt and this economic problems that have been kind of put out there by these banks. So she wants to basically tap into the Federal Reserve to kind of do, I don't know exactly the plan, but basically kind of like do like an easement to where they can get out of this debt. And then basically that would free a whole generation of people to be able to like start doing bigger and greater things, and which would stimulate the economy. And then her other thing is called what she calls a Green New Deal, which is similar to the New Deal plan after the Great Depression, where we create millions of jobs. And how we do that is by transitioning into clean and renewable energy. You know, giving people in the renewable energy sector jobs. And that kind of kills a lot of birds, you know, with one stone, where, you know, you're giving people jobs, and then at the same time, you're working to transition out of fossil fuels and into clean energy, so that, again, then it's better for the environment. And then, you know, when we improve the environment, then we improve our health. So, you know, there's lots of win-win-wins with that program. What else is our big things? Just in general, you know, she believes that, and the Green Party believes that we need to get out of these like endless wars in the Middle East, and that we kind of need to get our nose out of everybody else's government, stop, you know, turning over governments, and of course, get out of these wars for oil. And start using more of what she calls a peace offensive, using human rights and just foreign policies that are more based on like diplomacy and international law and human rights, rather than like our, you know, trigger response of just like, you know, going and dropping bombs and droning people for like unknown reasons. Well, there are known reasons, but they're not good reasons. And there's really no reason why the United States has been in these wars for the last, you know, what, 15 years? Well, even before. I don't think we've really kind of like ever, we kind of somehow have been in an eternal war, I think, for quite a while. But
yeah, I think we're in George Herbert Walker's Bush. I think we're in his sixth presidency right now, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, and it's not going to change. I mean, basically, it's going to be the same old, same old, same old. And it's actually quite frightening. I was actually really frightened, and have been getting increasingly so, that they keep blaming Russia for all of these things, blaming Russia for the WikiLeaks, blaming Russia now that somehow it's Russia's fault that, you know, we see all these images of like Syrian children and women in hospitals being bombed, and they're horrible images. And that's the United States doing that and their allies. That's not Russia. And in the debates this week, Hillary just went on and on about how Russia is the one who, you know, basically bombed Syria and created all those images. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, really, she is pushing for us to go to war with Russia. And I'm horrified by that. And
a lot of us are, yeah.
I don't think people, I mean, neither of these candidates are great candidates. Trump's got his issues. Hillary's got hers. Both of them are horrible. But I have to say that, you know, as far as Trump goes, I think some people say, you know, they'd rather have a civil war in the United States than a world war, which is what we would get with Hillary.
Well, they're trying to create both, actually, Kim.
Yeah, well, and I guess that goes back to the thing. Neither of them are two separate people. They're just only one person that, you know, we have all of that, you know, big money behind them, which is the military industrial complex, the fossil fuel industry. I mean, those are the two big ones that are keeping us over there, making those people bazillions of dollars at the expense of, you know, human life and human rights. Yeah. And not just that, but also then it becomes the right to life of this whole planet, you know, all life on this planet, whether it be, you know, from birds to bacteria, it's all affected by, you know, the climate change that is as an effect of our burning of fossil fuels. So, I mean, it's like it's all coming like to this culmination point where it's going to collapse if we don't do something immediately. I mean, we are in a crisis, and I don't think people realize how serious of a crisis the world really is in, and how fragile the biosphere and the ecosystem really is, because, you know, it can basically compensate to a while, but there's going to be that tipping point, I guess you could call it, where there's no return. And we're getting pretty close to it.
Yeah, there's no Earth 2.0, is there?
No. And, you know, and before, you know, if a civilization would collapse, you know, the Roman civilization collapsed, you know, people didn't disappear. They just kind of went off into their tribes, into the forest or whatever, and they regrouped and they moved on. But there's nowhere to go now. There's no new planet. There's no, you know, there's no new frontier to go to. It's all taken. So this is it.
Well, I absolutely agree with a lot of things that you're saying, and you know, we can debate for hours and hours and hours, but you do have a certain amount of time, and I just wanted to tell you that the history from college that I was taught, and it hasn't been a long time ago, it's just been a little less than 5 years ago now that I got my degree, but I remember the political system itself has pretty much almost ensured its survival to be a two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much work behind the scenes. Today, it's a camera and a microphone, but way back when, it used to be behind closed doors, so they weren't scrutinized. And they did work together to ensure it's just a two-party system.
Right.
That is really going to be the hard way to defeat them, is for people to probably leave both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing. I get tired of people saying, well, I don't want to vote a third party because they're not going to win. Well, yeah, they're not going to win unless you vote for them. You actually have to vote. I'm going to go kind of two directions with this. Number one, I want to say that I'm saying all this, but really in the end, I think that the voting system is super rigged right now. I mean, you have voter suppression and voter fraud, but like even the electronic voting booths are rigged. I mean, they even found ones that if you push, you know, one candidate, it just kind of like clicks down to the one below it or whatever.
Certainly.
So
most every electronically based system is going to be like that. They can program it to come out with whatever they want to come out with.
Right. So, I mean, we do need to change this whole system in general. We need to reform the whole electoral politics. I mean, it needs to be, you know, where it's not proportional representation, or it is proportional. I mean, instead of just like the winner takes all electoral, and, you know, the whole concept of ranked choice voting, I think is going to become really big for the, hopefully we can push it in every state for the next election.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to bring up, Kim. Mm-hmm. The Electoral College itself is also rigged. Did you just get a doorbell ring?
No, I got a message on my email.
Oh, okay. Anyways, the Electoral College system itself is also rigged. These people that are the delegates, or the superdelegates, I think mm-hmm. they're called, or whatever, they can actually vote for whoever they want. The majority of the people... The majority of the mass vote doesn't really dictate who they vote for.
Right. Exactly. And that's not democratic.
Not at all.
Not at all. So, I mean, clearly Bernie Sanders would have won the Democratic nomination if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
And it was close even with just the popular vote, but those were not counted either. So,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, my encouragement to people is that, number one, we need to educate people. We need to get the word out that Jill Stein is running for president, that people do have options. And I think she is a great option compared to the other three. So if people, even, you know, in their communities in Europe, you know, I mean, this is kind of a global world when it comes to information sharing, and, you know, people have family in the States or whatever, if they can just start blasting out on their Facebook pages or social media that, hey, you know, did you know that you could vote for Jill Stein in your state? There's only three states that you can't vote for Jill Stein. Nevada's unfortunately one of them. And that's like a long story of corruption right there. But aside from that, it's Nevada, South Dakota, and Oklahoma are the only three states that people will not be able to vote for Jill or write her in. But all the other states, she can be voted for, and there's a few states that are write-in states. But so people need to know that they can do that. So just kind of get the word out in any way you can. And I think this is probably going to be one of the most important elections of our history. Because, you know, again, we kind of all know Hillary's going to win because it's rigged, but the Green Party itself, it's a political party, but it's more than a political party. Greens kind of chose electoral politics to kind of be able to push the envelope and push, you know, those issues and ideas that they have. But really, the Green Party is a movement. It's a movement just like any other movement that puts pressure on the system to move in whatever direction. And this is a movement to the left. And in history, you know, great change was never brought by a political party. It was always brought by
an idea.
Like the civil rights movement, or, you know, women's equality, feminist movements, yep. or whatever, or environmental movements. They weren't political parties, but they were movements. And so the Green Party is also a movement. And it's also, again, it's the revolution. And I think through the Green Party, if people can unite, we can really, again, make a lot of great change in our systems, in our communities, in our everything. So
yeah, there's a saying out there, Kim, that ideas are bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I think they are. You know, it's you can kill the messenger, like Dr. Martin Luther King or some of the other greats that have been in movements, but you can't really kill the idea itself.
Right. And the people that, you know, again, embrace, you know, the Greens or the Bernie people and many other progressives in general, they kind of have that why, right? They have that moral compass that's driving them. And it's more important than other things like power or money. And so a lot of people are doing this just because it's the right thing to do. They're not making any money. They're all volunteers. But that to me is powerful in itself, because the reason why you're doing it is powerful. And so I think that is going to grow and build. And again, I just hope it grows and builds fast enough for us to be able to divert some of the real climate change disaster that we may be in coming into if we don't do act fast. But I wanted to say something else too.
Certainly.
And this is kind of going off the topic.
Certainly.
So like, again, we were talking about how media doesn't cover things. So right now, I'm not sure how much media coverage there is in the EU about Standing Rock Sioux and the No DAPL, where they're blocking the Native Americans are blocking the pipeline
in
North Dakota.
We have a direct connection. One of our hosts is, she's part Native Indian, and she has a connection right over there in that area that does live remotes on a cell phone.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that, because this, again, is one story of how you have money and the fossil fuel industry and all this power and how privatization is just not so great. But they're using, you know, militarized police against peaceful water protectors.
Well, they're not even military.
Are they mercenary types?
Yeah, they're just
And then that's even, it's kind of even worse, because then they don't even have any
connection
or care for the people or the community or anything. They're not even the police,
and they actually don't even have any authority to do anything over there. They don't have any authority to push people around or sick their attack dogs on anyone.
Right, and to me, it's absolutely horrifying, and I just question all the time, how come people have lost their sense of outrage? How come when people see that, you know, militarized mercenary or private, you know, police or even militarized police are being used against the American people, you know, in Black Lives Matters marches or anything, that doesn't cause outrage in people enough to actually do something? Or when people see images of, you know, the bombings in the Middle East, how does that not cause enough outrage in people to do something? And I feel like we've somehow become desensitized. And how do we resensitize? You know,
I don't think it's so much desensitized. I think it's fear. And it's also, well, they're not doing it to me, so I'm just going to turn my head.
Right. Like, it's too far away. It's not in your own backyard yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Well, let me know if you have to go. Otherwise, we can go on. Or
I think we could go on for like hours and hours and hours, but yeah. I do have to go. So,
Well, that's okay.
I hope that I've been able to share something great with everybody, and I'm sure there were probably some points that I should have said, and I'll think about later and think, oh, I should have said this, but. But I think in general, like I was saying, I think everyone needs, you know, I would like to run away from this election year, like probably everybody else does, but just to remember that, you know, your vote still counts, hopefully, and that voting for a third party, particularly Jill Stein, would really be a move in the right direction. And even if you just change your registration to green, you know, in many states, you don't have to vote the same party that you're registered with. So, you know, just becoming a green will also kind of send a message that, you know, there's this movement building, and it'll put some pressure on the system.
And
not to give up hope. Just, you know, gather together with people that are like-minded in your community and just start working at it.
Yeah. You've actually given me four sites earlier. One is invgreenparty.org, and the other is www.jill2016.com, and there's www.gpus.org and www.gp.org. Maybe you can just say what those links are. I've already put them in the chat room.
The nvgreenparty.org is just the Nevada Green Party, which if anyone's specifically interested in Nevada, you could go there. GP.org and GPUS.org are both the National Green Party websites. And then, of course, the Jill 2016 is the Jill Stein's campaign page. And where all of those are on Facebook and Twitter. And we just really, you know, would appreciate everybody's support in any way possible. Like I said, either through social media or through donations to the campaign. Obviously, again, Jill's campaign doesn't take any money from corporations, so she's depending on individuals. You know, it's all grassroots to run the campaign. So any donations, $5 or anything, would be appreciated.
Well, certainly. Do you want to give out your own personal links, like a Facebook or Twitter or anything else? Or?
I do have a Facebook page. It's just Kim Borghese, but I have so much going on that I dare not give too much information out, or I'll be like inundated with
right
too much
inundated with
too
trolls.
Much communication. Sometimes it's dangerous. I still have to focus a little bit on my career and my family, or I might lose my mind.
Well, certainly. Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on, and we are connected with Skype and email. So if you send a message, you can get some airtime. I do two shows a week, one on Tuesday and one on Sundays.
That sounds great. So if I feel like I need to stand up on a soapbox, I'll give you a call.
I'm on my soapbox twice a week, and you know, I do it on Facebook and all other types of things also.
Actually, I do like doing the radio interview because I hate writing, and so I'm not a blogger or I don't write anything, so it's just so much easier for me just to say it. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Well, certainly. Thank you, Kim.
All right. Take care, Steve.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Interesting. Interesting. Ed hooked me up with Kim there, so who knows? We might be doing some things in the future. Interesting woman and an interesting Green Party. I've always heard about the Green Party. I'm going to do some investigating into Jill Stein. Not going to say where the investigation is going to go, but it's just an investigation. So I'll put a song or two on, and we'll take a little break and come right back for some more. Thank you, everyone. I'll be right back.